Planet Football Podcast is brought to you by FreshBooks. It's smart, mobile accounting designed specifically for freelancers and small business owners. You can try FreshBooks for 30 days on us with no credit card required. Go to freshbooks.com/sports and enter sports in the How You Heard About Us section.
That the only real leverage at FIFA was in the sponsors who write the checks and who ultimately fund this organization. Sponsors of, you know, press releases calling for reform and things like that, but they're still writing the checks.
But I think it depends who wins the election, how much the rules are enforced and what kind of culture is set from the top. Sepp Blatter always set a culture from the top that he wasn't going to crack down on bad actors. So whoever comes in, I think, needs to be able to do that, or otherwise it will be business as usual.
Welcome to SI's Planet Football Podcast, where each week we discuss the latest in the world of soccer. I am SI.com soccer editor Avi Krediter, joined today by SI senior writer Grant Wall in Zurich, SI.com's Brian Strauss in Washington, D.C., and SI.com's James Young in Brazil. That's right, three continents, one podcast. We're making a new definition of Planet Football, really. Before we get started, I just want to make a special mention of last week's podcast. It was Grant interviewing JP Della Camera, legendary U.S. soccer announcer. The plan wasn't for that to go as long as it did and be as extensive as it was, but their talk was enthralling. I got a kick out of listening to all these stories from JP's career. I loved how at the end he just threw in this nugget about how he called an indoor soccer game with Martin Tyler in England, just out of the blue. So if you haven't had a chance yet, definitely go back and listen to that. You can find it on iTunes or on Planet Football or on SoundCloud or Stitcher. Definitely worth a listen. But now turning our attention to the matters of this week. Grant, you were in Zurich for the FIFA election, which we're going to start with, and we'll go to some Copa America talk after that. Lots to get into, lots going on in the world of soccer. But first, Grant, I just want to get your take on the scene there right now. We're taping this the day before the FIFA election.
Yeah, I got here Wednesday morning. It's now Thursday afternoon. Election is Friday. Lots of media here from all over the world, particularly Europe. I was laughing yesterday because Jerome Champagne probably has just about the least chance to win this election. He's one of the five candidates, but he had this scrum of probably 40 media people and cameras surrounding him. He was a rock star outside the hall where this is taking place. And this was a guy I was just kind of hanging out with one-on-one in Antigua last month. The media here is a large force around the candidates. This is the first time I've ever been on site for a FIFA election. I've seen it from a distance in the past, but not a lot of news, to be honest. It's cold here. It's snowing. And everyone's sort of getting keyed up and ready for what comes next on Friday. And there's a real uncertainty. We don't know who's going to win this election. It's going to be either Gianni Infantino or Sheikh Salman. And we'll have to wait and see how things play out.
Obviously more buzz around this election than perhaps in the past. Everything that happened surrounding the election last May when Sepp Blatter won after all of the arrests at the Borlak Hotel. So much has happened since then. Sepp Blatter and Michel Platini, they've both been banned. That was reduced from 8 years to 6 years, just in time for the Qatar World Cup. How convenient. And obviously, you know, this election is supposedly about reform and taking FIFA into this new place and all of these rainbows and unicorns. And maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't. James, I want to welcome you in. First time on the podcast. So thank you for joining us. I guess Brazil can play a role in this. CONMEBOL has put its you wonder if these continents are going to vote in a certain block or not, but Brazil has kind of gone out on their own and said they're going to support Sheikh Salman here. And Brazil's role in this scandal has, you know, the last few months has been huge too, with a lot of high-ranking officials. I guess just what is the country's role in all of this, and how is everything being perceived there?
Well, I think Brazil has a long-standing and deeply complicated relationship with corruption, be it political or in this case, in the world of football. I think it's perhaps the country that is, you could argue, benefited the most from the FBI investigations. because they've uncovered the kind of institutionalized corruption of the CBF, the local soccer federation. Brazil's in a strange situation. I mean, it's a developing nation with all the problems that can come along with that, such as political corruption and cronyism. But it has this huge asset, which is the national football team, the Seleção, as they're called here. So the combination of these two things led to this culture of corruption and financial gain, individual financial gain at the CBF, which, as we've seen, the FBI has now uncovered in the form of arrests or investigations into the last three CBF presidents, Ricardo Teixeira, José Marín, and now Marco Polo Del Nero. So by bringing about change in the structure of power in the Brazilian domestic game, the FBI has done the country a great service, we hope. In terms of the FIFA elections, yeah, to some extent that's Brazil's behavior in the elections kind of sums up a lot of how things work here. As you say, the CONMEBOL bloc was very much leaning towards Infantino, but now there's the suggestion that Brazil might go the other way with Sheikh Salman. And apparently the reason for that is simply that they don't want to be on the losing side. They want to back the winner. So that may then lead to CONMEBOL to go with them, which could lead to a major change in how the votes go down on Friday.
Grant, now as far as the USA is concerned, you've reported this, that they're not going to publicly endorse a candidate, but there are two that they were looking at most likely supporting, and then there's one that they definitely don't want to win. I guess what's the USA's approach at this, and ultimately, what do you think? I guess Don Garber is the one that's going to be casting the vote on behalf of the U.S. is going to do.
Well, it's interesting to compare the U.S.'s approach to the one it had last May for that election. In that one, they came out and before the election endorsed Prince Ali against Sepp Blatter. They wanted to make a statement against Blatter and for the reform that Prince Ali was for. In this election, the U.S. is not publicly endorsing a candidate. And, you know, there's criticism of that. You know, if you're going to be part of cleaning up the game, why can't you take a stand and choose someone? And I think the reason for that is there's a close personal friendship between Sunil Gulati, the president of U.S. soccer, and Prince Ali. And so I suspect that in the first round, the U.S. will vote for Prince Ali. Most observers, including me, don't think Prince Ali has close to the votes he needs to win this election. He's the number three candidate, and yet he could still influence the outcome of the election if he is removed from the process in later rounds for not getting enough votes. Who do his supporters go for? And I could see the U.S. voting for Infantino in rounds two and potentially beyond. The U.S. wants to be on the winning end. They definitely do not want Sheikh Salman to win. And so I could see the U.S. opening with Prince Ali and then going to Infantino from there.
Brian, I want to bring you in now. You know, this is all about this reform. Do you actually see anything changing ultimately?
You know, I've sort of thought for several years now that the culture of corruption and self-enrichment at FIFA is so deep that they almost don't even realize, you know, that there's anything sort of sketchy or untoward about the way they behave. And my feeling has been for a while now that the only real leverage at FIFA, you know, without considering what Loretta Lynch was up to, but, you know, that the only real leverage at FIFA was in the sponsors who write the checks and who ultimately fund this organization. And while they haven't really signed up any new sponsors over the past couple of years, you know, sponsors have issued, you know, press releases calling for reform and things like that, but they're still writing the checks and they're still supporting this organization. So, you know, whether it's Infantino or Salman or any of these are still insiders. These are still FIFA guys. These are still people who want power and who need to cater to the people who give it to them in order to keep it. And so for me, you know, as long as these companies are writing checks to FIFA, as long as they don't take a stand, I don't see much changing. But then, of course, you add in the investigations in the U.S. and Switzerland, and maybe that'll be enough to strike fear into some of these people. But in the end, as long as FIFA's funded, I see mostly it being business as usual.
Grant, you've spoken to four of the five candidates. Do you get a genuine feel, especially from Infantino, given that he's one of the favorites here, that he could be a difference than what's been in the past and just this rule of corruption?
Well, I think there are differences between the two favorites, Infantino and Sheikh Salman. You know, Sheikh Salman is a guy who has said publicly he doesn't think soccer has nearly as big a problem with corruption as other sports like track and field. And that suggests to me that we're looking at very business as usual stuff if Sheikh Salman wins. Infantino, on the other hand, has never been implicated in any sort of wrongdoing. He is the right-hand man of Michel Platini, who is suspended from all soccer things for accepting a payment from the also-suspended Sepp Blatter, but Infantino was not part of that deal. Infantino has been a part of UEFA for a long time, and yes, he's an insider, but he's supervised a pretty huge amount of growth in revenues at UEFA, and I think I agree with him in the sense that Infantino thinks FIFA could be doing could be earning a lot more money than it currently does if it had such things like a global FIFA satellite channel that I think people would pay money for. He also is very much for cutting costs for FIFA events. He thinks it's crazy how much money gets spent on these congresses with the per diems and bringing in voters from all over the world. I think it's also important to bring up the reforms that are being voted on Friday as well, because this is a pretty sweeping set of governance reforms that include things like term limits for 12 years for the FIFA president and executive committee, increasing the executive committee from 25 members to 36 and calling it the FIFA Council, but requiring that at least six of those members be women, which I think is a good step in the right direction that actually needs to be stronger in the future. Instituting very strict background checks, which they say are strict, but also Sheikh Salman was able to pass, which is makes them to me a little dubious. You know, things that should push the direction more into the 21st century, but I think it depends who wins the election, how much the rules are enforced and what kind of culture is set from the top. Sepp Blatter always set a culture from the top that he wasn't going to crack down on bad actors. So whoever comes in, I think, needs to be able to do that, or otherwise it will be business as usual.
Well, Sepp said it wasn't his job to manage these people. They're just acting on their own. Come on, give him a break. What's he ever done? Come on. I want to get one thing from each of you guys. What's one thing, James? Let's start with you. That the next FIFA president must deal with in the first 90 days. Just off the bat, you know, make a statement. What's one thing?
I thought Brian's point was really interesting about how can you reform what is seen as a corrupt investigation from within when most of the people involved in that institution will be very used to the way that things work. So how can you bring about very real change from within? And also the fact that external candidates are very rare. I was thinking about Zico. Zico was a kind of abortive attempt to become a candidate. It was never really taken seriously, and so you don't see very many outside candidates. So I suppose what the new president has to do is give some kind of a sign that things have changed. This is going to sound very abstract, but whether that's through the appointment of new people, someone who suggests a real kind of new broom atmosphere, or the setting up of serious reform committees, again, using external individuals, external authorities, just something concrete to show that the old days of kind of secret meetings and handshakes and brown envelopes and so on are gone. So someone who will give a new look to FIFA and not just be another FIFA suit, if you understand the expression.
Yeah, Brian, what do you think? What's one must have thing or must do thing for the next FIFA president?
Release the entire Garcia report, no redactions, no edits, into the bidding for the 2018 and 2022 World Cups. and this is out of my realm of expertise, but release financial figures. I want to know what these guys are paid. I want to know what everyone at FIFA, the president, the executive committee, the secretaries, the janitors, I want to know what their salaries are. I want to know what their per diems are. I want to know how much they're spending on room service sushi at their hotels. All the financial figures, the entire World Cup report, online, day one, that would be a good sign.
That would certainly go a long ways in establishing some transparency. Grant, what about you? What do you think?
I agree with Brian. Release the Garcia report in its entirety. I don't expect that there's actually that many smoking guns in there, if any. The word I had always gotten was that there was nothing in the Garcia report that would actually cause Qatar to lose the World Cup, but it would still be a real show that they're willing to actually release some things to the light that haven't been able to be seen before. I think also whoever becomes president, they have to name a general secretary who's going to basically be a CEO of the organization. And whoever is named needs to be someone who's qualified for it, who makes people feel good about the direction that FIFA is heading. They'll be replacing a general secretary in Jerome Valk, who has been banned from the sport for taking all sorts of private plane trips that he shouldn't have and falsifying expense reports. And that's kind of the tip of the iceberg with him. So I think naming a general secretary, pick the right one.
Definitely. Now, before we move on to some lighter, more exciting talk about what's coming to the U.S. this summer, Grant, is it true that some of these executives are still staying at the Borlak Hotel?
Yes, it is. The famous five-star hotel here in Switzerland where two sets of arrests have already been made last May and in December. No arrests so far this week. At this point, I'm starting to wonder if it may not happen this week. They're still staying there. At least a lot of the officials in town are. And I got to say, for me, I spent a lot of time at the Borlak. The last time I was in Zurich in 2010, that was when Qatar and Russia were so controversially awarded the World Cup hosting rights. And it just sort of, it just felt sleazy, five-star sleazy, the whole thing. I remember being in the Borlak Hotel the night, after the announcements for Qatar and Russia were made. And just observing the scene made me want to take a shower. It was funny because the England FA guys who had lost in their bid for 2018 were sort of licking their wounds in one corner of the room I was in. And these three African FIFA executive committee members went over and all of them told the England guys that they had voted for them. And the England guys just sort of shook their heads because they knew they had only gotten two votes. Clearly somebody was lying. So Sunil Gulati has always said that only believe someone when they tell you that they didn't vote for you, not when they told you that they did. So we'll see if that principle holds up on Friday.
Can't believe they're still staying at that hotel. You're just asking for it. I think the over-under on arrests for Loretta Lynch was set at 5.5 on Bovada. I think that's what I had seen for Friday. We'll see what actually happens. But in any event, interesting times ahead for FIFA, and whether or not anything actually changes, it'll manifest itself in the upcoming months and years. We're going to take a quick break and then come back with talk about Copa America Centenario. Given everything that's happened at FIFA over the last decade plus, it's safe to say that they probably could have used some help with bookkeeping, maybe taking care of some of their taxes, looking after their numbers a little more closely. Unfortunately for them, FreshBooks wasn't around when all of this started, but now it definitely is. And for the best way to manage your books and make tax season easy, you should get FreshBooks. It's a super intuitive tool that makes creating and sending invoices extremely simple for freelancers and small business owners. FreshBooks stands out where it really counts, getting you paid. You can create and send professional invoices in just 30 seconds. You'll see exactly when your client looked at the invoice you've emailed, tracking the status of all of our outstanding invoices for you. FreshBooks can even send late payment reminders to your clients automatically, which means you're not wasting time chasing down and fighting clients for payment. The results speak for themselves. FreshBooks users get paid 5 days faster on average. Don't just take my word for it. Right now, FreshBooks is offering our listeners 30 days of unrestricted use, totally free, and you don't need a credit card to sign up. Just go to freshbooks.com/sports and enter sports in the How You Heard About Us section. That's freshbooks.com/sports and enter sports in the How You Heard About Us section. Every week on the SI Media Podcast, Richard Deitch speaks with top sports journalists, and this week he has Gab Marcotti of ESPN and the Times of London. If you follow soccer, you've definitely heard, seen, or read something that Marcotti has done. So, listen to the SI Media Podcast with Richard Deitch on iTunes, Stitcher, or si.com/podcasts. All right, welcome back. Want to turn the page and talk about Copa America Centenario. Grant, you and I were at the draw, this just woohoo! lovely draw event at the Hammerstein Ballroom in Manhattan, where there was dancing, there was ploys to sell tickets, and then, of course, the actual groups themselves. Group A, the USA, Colombia, Costa Rica, Paraguay. Group B, Brazil, Ecuador, Haiti, Peru. Group C, Mexico, Uruguay, Jamaica, Venezuela. And Group D, Argentina, Chile, Panama, and Bolivia. Grant, what'd you think of the draw first?
Well, we enjoyed sitting next to each other and sort of chuckling at our Twitter feeds as the festivities went on. I mean, the genre of soccer draws is a very remarkable and strange thing. And they all seem to be sort of the same. You get a couple of random musical groups. You get, mass calls to cheer from an MC, when the TV broadcast comes back on. There's a lot of stuff going on that has nothing to do with the actual reason that everyone is there. And so you're kind of sitting there hoping that, just get to the teams already, I mean, you compare it to NCAA tournament selection Sunday and they get the teams out there and tell you which brackets they're in. But, we're used to it. I actually thought it was kind of a good thing that in the past, we've often seen a lot of bikini-clad women on stage for these things and basically treating women as objects. And this one wasn't quite as bad as some of those things are. So, yay, I guess.
Steps in the right direction. There was one dance performance where the jackets looked like they were straight out of a Saved by the Bell episode, which, which was tremendous. James, how is this tournament being perceived in Brazil? It's a big summer with the Olympics going on as well, and obviously Brazil fell to Mexico in the gold medal game in London. There's a lot of anticipation that they'll win gold medal for the first time this summer, but then there's Copa America as well, which isn't necessarily as big of a deal as other ones, given that there's no Confederations Cup ticket on the line. There's all the CONCACAF teams are involved. I guess, what's the feeling down there?
Not a huge amount of enthusiasm or excitement as yet, I'd have to say. First of all, as you mentioned, because of the Olympics, that's kind of going to take priority. Brazil always talk about that competition as being the only major event that they haven't won. They have a dubious relationship with the Copa America to begin with. I think possibly because of their World Cup success, it's kind of become something of a second priority for them. They've done very badly the last two competitions. And I'm not sure if it's something we're going to get onto in a second, but they've been the announcement today that Neymar was going to play in the Olympics probably rather than in the Copa America, which gives you some idea of how they're prioritizing things.
That'd be shocking, given how much Neymar's face has been on everything regarding this tournament. They've used his image and his highlights and everything in every ad promotional piece, every press release. So if those reports, hold, I mean, that would frankly suck for the American public who are going to try and go to these games. But what would that do for Brazil's chances in this tournament? I mean, he's such a big deal of that team, big part of that team.
Oh, absolutely. I think that the last two competitions I've covered for Sports Illustrated, the World Cup and then the Copa America last year, most of the conversation that revolved around Brazil was are they a one-man team or not, and how dependent are they on Neymar? They've plenty of talented players going forward. Douglas Costa has come in, has done quite well, and so on. But the heartbeat of the team is Neymar. So yeah, we saw a couple of times during the Copa America, I think, how limited they are in terms of going forward without his flair and his pace and his brain.
So you can imagine they would struggle quite seriously without him.
Yeah, I mean, that changes the whole dynamic of the tournament, honestly. Brian, the USA drew a pretty interesting group, Colombia, Costa Rica, Paraguay. Of the options that were there in the draw, this might have been the toughest one. You know, maybe mix and match one from the second pot instead of Colombia. But what do you think of their chances in this group?
I think they're okay. I had trouble when I was sort of going through all the permutations, looking for a group that the U.S. shouldn't finish at least second in. And this is a group the U.S. should finish second in. Paraguay has had a rough year. That's not a team that can score a lot of goals. Costa Rica is a team that the U.S. in competitive matches usually defeats at home. And Colombia is going to be the favorite. And so, you know, before the draw came out, I would have, you know, there's some pressure on Jurgen Klinsmann, obviously, after last year, and he's got to build a team and a back four that can sustain this. But, you know, talent wise, home field advantage, this is a group the U.S. should be expected to get out of and finish second. The reason I think Neymar's absence is such a big deal is because, you know, however you sort of see this tournament playing out, it's hard to see the U.S. avoiding Brazil in the quarterfinals. I mean, Brazil should still be expected to win their group. Like I said, it's hard to see the U.S. Winning its group, but I would expect them to finish second. And so that gives us a quarterfinal between Brazil and the U.S. At the Meadowlands. And if Neymar's not, you know, with Neymar, you know, I think the Americans go out of the tournament. Without Neymar, if Brazil's lacking ideas, if the U.S., you know, a few things go right, you know, maybe things are possible there for Klinsmann's team to make a bigger run. So I think Neymar's absence, while it may hurt ticket sales, I think will help the U.S. ultimately. And I think the U.S. has no excuse not to get the results against Costa Rica and Paraguay that they need to get out of this group.
Just, I would agree with you. It's just everything that happened last summer in the Gold Cup kind of gives you pause, right? I mean, they couldn't beat Panama. They couldn't beat Jamaica, and this was on home soil. They lost to Costa Rica, granted, in a game that they were probably sleepwalking through given everything that that had preceded it. So why? I think we used to take those results for granted. Now I don't know that they have the benefit of the doubt as much anymore.
Until last summer is not an outlier, it's an outlier. If it happens again, then yeah, then you really got to look to Klinsmann and look to the way he's built this team and look to the way he's been unable to sort of create a reliable and consistent tactical identity for this team. Then yeah, then you really start to say, okay, what's going on here? But as of now, last summer is an outlier. And he has several months. He's got two qualifiers against Guatemala next month. He'll have a camp before the Copa America. He has the lessons he hopefully learned last summer about constructing a team and relying on an inexperienced back four. You know, he will get the benefit of the doubt until he doesn't. That's just the way, you know, Sunil Gulati has sort of set things up here. So, like I said, it's an outlier until it's not. Paraguay and Costa Rica are beatable teams. The U.S. should be expected to beat these teams at home and finish second in its group. And if they fail to do that, then I agree with everything you're saying.
Fair enough. Before we get to some way too early group predictions, Grant, I want to get your thoughts on maybe some of the under-the-radar games in the group stage. Obviously, Argentina-Chile is going to stand out. Mexico-Uruguay is going to stand out. Any group games that really strike you after seeing this lineup in the draw?
Well, for starters, USA Costa Rica in game two at Soldier Field in Chicago could have a lot riding on it as far as survival in the tournament. And these are two teams that know each other extremely well. Like Brian said, the US has the big advantage over the years in competitive games on US soil against Costa Rica. But at the same time, there's no fear of the US team anymore, including in games in the United States. And I think a lot of that's the result of what happened in the Gold Cup last year and in the friendly where Costa Rica beat the U.S. You look at the U.S.'s group and you've got World Cup 2014 quarterfinalists in Colombia and Costa Rica. You've got Paraguay, which reached the quarterfinals in World Cup 2010. That's a pretty difficult group based on that. That said, in terms of current form, Colombia hasn't been playing as well recently. Paraguay missed the last World Cup. Costa Rica hasn't been playing that great either. Other games, to me, Brazil-Haiti is going to be potentially a blowout, but it will at least kind of be a fun environment and has a lot of history behind it. Haiti has always been a huge fan of Brazil, and back in 2004, there was a famous match for peace that the Brazil national team, the world champions at the time, played in Haiti, where you had Ronaldo and Roberto Carlos and Ronaldinho playing in a kind of a rickety old stadium, and it was just a really neat moment to help with relief funds. I guess I would throw those out there. Argentina, Chile is going to be fun just because it's a rematch of the Copa America final from last year. I have to wonder how the Chileans feel about this tournament. My guess is they aren't big fans of it and think of it as just a marketing exercise, just because they're the defending champion. They won at home last year, and now here's this other sort of imposter Copa America tournament that they feel is being done for marketing purposes, and they want everyone to know, we're the Copa America champions, and we weren't even seeded for this tournament for marketing reasons.
Yeah, which you would think is the least that that the two confederations could have done for them after their performance at home last summer. All right, it's early. We don't know these rosters obviously yet. Neymar, if he's there or if he reportedly is not, that's a game changer. But that's not going to stop us from getting into some early group predictions. So James, let's start with you. Give me the two teams you think are going to make it out of each group.
Okay, it's hard to look beyond the favorites, but Colombia have been struggling recently. They were poor at the Copa America, and they're not doing particularly well in South American World Cup qualifying. So maybe a surprise there. Maybe USA and then one of the others. Maybe Colombia miss out, and it's USA and Costa Rica. Group B, Brazil, Ecuador. It's hard to look beyond those two. Group C, the same. Mexico, Uruguay, Venezuela are in a real state of chaos. And Group D again, Argentina, Chile. So far from Group A, it's hard to look beyond the favorites, I'd say.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, when you do look at the draw, there's definitely a top tier of each group, right? But that hasn't stopped Jamaica from making a run to the Gold Cup final last summer, and Panama obviously finishing third. Brian, what do you think? Do you have a different take on the groups?
I don't. Sorry, I'm not much of a gambling man because I'm a terrible, terrible loser. But certainly, if I would bet on, I think Colombia and the U.S. will get out of A, and then the favorites and the rest of them. I mean, for me, this tournament, especially if Neymar's gone. This tournament really is about Leo Messi and Argentina. Argentina hasn't won a major honor at the senior level since winning the Copa America in 1993. I mean, that's 20-plus years. I mean, it's been a long time. They lost the World Cup final. They lost the Copa America final to Chile. Messi has won Olympic gold. He won an under-20 World Cup, I believe, but is still searching for his first major honor. And time's running out for him. He maybe has the next World Cup. To sort of break that streak. And it means a lot to him. He wants to win something with his country. And so, I think this tournament is going to be about that quest for him and Argentina to make up for two lost finals to see if they can finally put together and win a trophy. So we'll see that play out in the knockout rounds. I think the group stage is going to be pretty perfunctory.
I think that's a fantastic point, Grant. What do you think? Any different take on how these groups will play out? Any wild cards? Paraguay to win it all?
I'll stay away from picking groups until I know which teams, which players are going to be coming for which teams. I will say this. I think the U.S. will find a way to get out of its group. The U.S. tends to perform better historically for a long time when it's a tougher group as opposed to when they're expected to emerge. So if they can get out of that World Cup 2014 group, I think they can here on home soil. I like Argentina to win this. I think they're going to send one of their top teams. They don't care as much about the Olympics. They've won it a lot. They haven't won a major trophy in a long time at senior level. So I could see Messi really focusing on this tournament. And then, you know, I would just say don't sleep on Uruguay. That's a team that they're hard to beat, but they've also got a tremendous amount of talent. And that's a pretty good combination in tournament soccer.
Luis Suarez is also playing just the best soccer of his career right now. He might be, I mean, look, if he was on any other team, you might be able to compare him to, you know, say that he's got a shot at a Ballon d'Or perhaps, but he's also playing in the Messi Ronaldo era, and he's playing against Messi or playing with Messi and Neymar. So it kind of loses the individuality of what he's doing. But he's just playing out of his mind. And if he can bring that form this summer to the U.S., then yeah, it's all there for the taking. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for us. One final thought for me, though. It is funny to you know, we're talking about these two subjects, FIFA election and Copa America, how the two are just intrinsically linked, right? I mean, this tournament almost didn't happen because of all of the corruption that was tied to it, the hundreds of millions of dollars in marketing bribes. Yet here we are on the cusp of another FIFA election, and this tournament is all systems go for now. So we'll definitely look forward to that this summer. I want to thank all of you guys for joining us from all of your different places on the planet. Grant Wall in Zurich, Brian Strass in DC, and James Young in Brazil. For Alex Abnos, our producer, I am Avi Krediter. We will talk to you next week on the Planet Football Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.